Get him.
Welcome, folks. Y'all come on in and make yourself at home. This here? Well, this is the Rolling Thunder Podcast, your home for all things Rolling Thunder. This episode of the Rolling Thunder Podcast is presented by Mossy Oak Camouflage, because everything is better in Bottomland. And Lucky Duck Premium Decoys, masters of deception.
Obsession, the domination of one's thoughts or feelings by a persistent idea, image, or desire. For the past 30 years, our obsession here at Mossy Oak has been chasing turkeys. That absolute commitment has led us to develop all new Mossy Oak Obsession, the most realistic, true-to-spring turkey pattern ever. This pattern was built by obsessed turkey hunters for obsessed turkey hunters. All new Mossy Oak Obsession, the official camo of the NWTF.
Welcome to another episode of the Rolling Thunder Podcast. We're at Feathers Chapel tonight. We've got a couple special guests. How are we doing, Spence, if you want to introduce everybody?
What a beautiful evening. We've got some of our favorite friends of springtime, Josh Grossenbacher and Hunter Wallace, here at the house. Young Tripp, how are you guys this evening?
Doing good, man. It's nice to get out of the cold and be down here where it's a little bit warmer anyway.
No doubt.
Great to be here.
We were talking on the way home, Rob. Today is like the first day where you could tell it stayed light just a little bit longer. It was clear. So it was a nice sunset. It's about 55 degrees this afternoon. And Hunter was sitting in the backseat of the truck, and he said, this is the first day I felt like spring might actually show back up.
It just felt right, man.
It did. Speaking of spring, Big Trip's been getting some lessons yesterday mid-Super Bowl from a couple of fantastic mouth call teachers. You want to give us a little rendition on what you got there, T-Rip?
That's pretty solid.
That's pretty good. When did you start using that mouth call?
Yesterday.
When?
Yesterday.
That's pretty good. Have you been practicing?
Yeah. It was pretty impressive. Handed him a call, and within a minute, I mean, he was
hacking on it.
Getting some clear, getting some rasp, and laying into it.
Yep.
Sounded good.
He picked it up more naturally than anybody I've seen in a long time. I mean, that's pretty unbelievable in a two-minute time how he can get sounds out of it. Not a lot of people could do that.
It's too bad you can't sign autographs next weekend.
Oh,
You're kind of looking forward to that, weren't you?
That is a bummer for a lot of people around the country.
Yes. Yes, no doubt.
Definitely felt weird on the ride in yesterday evening coming through Nashville and not making that turn down Brawley Parkway and headed west for Memphis, you know.
I felt that yesterday afternoon. Like normally the Sunday before is kind of tidy up things because we're going to be on serious packing alert Monday morning to cram it all and get all the decoys out of the trailer and cram all the – you know, booth supplies and show everybody how unprepared we are for 50,000 people to walk through the turnstiles. Oh, man, going to miss seeing so many fun people, you know. I know for you guys the same way, but.
Oh, yeah. It's just such a fun place. You know, you get down there, it's like the energy, the whole place is just so high. Everybody anticipating spring, and it's too bad that it's not going to work out this year, but let's hope for next year anyway.
Yeah. No doubt. Man, let's hope for next year. Well, what? Goodness gracious, we got
dogs, coyotes, cats,
sheesh.
Young yelpers.
Yeah. Talk about spring. What do you guys got going? Have y'all started kind of making plans and talking through where you expect to see one die?
Well, we're late on everything we do, so. not completely. Yeah,
we've got ideas. We've got nothing.
You're
going to
fit right in.
Welcome. Well, I guess really quickly, if you want to, Hunter, if you want to take some time, kind of introduce yourself real quick for those who may not know you, kind of.
My name's Hunter Wallace. I'm 23 from Pennsylvania. Been hunting turkeys and calling a turkey contest for as long as I can remember, man, ever since I'm 5 or 6 years old, and got to be good buddies with Josh and done a lot of cool stuff together. Got to hunt all over the country, and him and I decided to make the move over here to Rolling Thunder, and feels like a definite match. So,
quit smiling at me.
All just looked at you like weird. It was like your turn.
I was kind of passing the torch there when I looked at you, but.
Well, thank you. Okay. Glad to be here again.
You have to remember people can't see this.
Yeah, I know.
No, it's exciting times right now. Just went live with the website earlier this week, and it's been kind of overwhelming, the amount of orders that have come in. Really cool. We spent some time at the shop this morning filming some call demonstrations and stuff like that for the website and social media stuff.
For all those people that are after big gobblers.
Yeah.
Only big ones.
Yeah.
We've got all kinds of heckling that's been going on all day.
Rough work trying to shoot call demonstrations with a room full of funny guys. Gee whiz.
I'm sure that's what you were calling us before. Yeah. Guys, right?
Yeah. So y'all are sitting there trying to do sound files, and you got the peanut gallery going behind you.
Absolutely.
But you might need to lay that one down again. It sounded a little thin on the top end, you know.
It's definitely the peanut gallery's fault.
Yeah.
Right.
But no, there's a lot of exciting things coming down the pipe, and I'm excited for the future and just everything that's going on with the whole Rolling Thunder deal right now. It's really cool. It's really exciting, and spring can't get here fast enough, that's for sure.
It's pretty neat. Today was the first day I've been in the shop all day in a while. I mean, I've been duck hunting, you know, since like July. What it feels like, no. But we've got a young lady that's recently started, I guess 3 or 4 months ago, and I've met her a few times. Her name's Morgan, and I mean, she probably was the bright spot for me today, just being in the shop. She has just kind of completely revolutionized how we inventory everything and how we prepare and pack for store orders.
Yeah.
So she had a big whiteboard up there for Aaron, for what Aaron needed to build. And so in just like a very short period of time, we've gone from Aaron operating the CNC machine, tuning every duck call, packaging every duck call, preparing pallets and shipping every duck call, as well as all the turkey calls.
Cool.
Now he's literally able to just do what he's good at, which is to build the calls. And Josh is building mouth calls, so Aaron's building kind of all the friction stuff. And then Morgan is just pulling from inventory and shipping. And, I mean, to most people listening, that's not going to sound like that's that big of a deal, but I've never been there. You know, never had multiple people working full time round the clock and still not catching up.
Yeah.
So it's a good problem. It's just, you know.
No, you can see it. I mean, from my last trip down here a few months ago, the amount of organization, it's just going to make life so much easier on everybody. I thought one of the bright spots for me today was meeting Russell and seeing.
What a great guy.
Yeah, seeing his operation of turning the pots and finishing them and everything. That was really cool.
Yep. Rob, I don't even think you've met Russell.
I haven't yet. I was about to say, go ahead. And
so Russell started working for us, I'm going to say in, I guess, November and December.
Yeah.
Somewhere late November, I guess, he started. Russell worked in a steel factory in Jonesboro, I guess, Nucor, and a big rack of, I don't know what you call them, but those racks that hold all the kind of the raw materials, you know, the steel, fell. Oof. And he lost his legs from his knees down. And so he's been on disability. He's got 2 peg legs, and he started piddling with turkey calls in his spare time. It's called Peg Legs Custom Calls.
Yeah.
And we needed help at the shop, and somehow John and Adam connected with Russell, and he was just kind of piddling really with his custom calls. I mean, he's a really talented call maker in his own right, but in a COVID year when there's no trade shows, it's pretty hard to be a small-time custom call maker.
Sure.
So he brought some of his equipment up to the shop, and we gave him the opportunity to, like, have a better place to operate. And he just, like, dove headlong into the Rolling Thunder brand and saw kind of how many orders we had coming in. And he was like, hey, I can help with this. I can help with this. Well, here in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks, he has programmed Tabletop Mill to run our pots. And so we went from, I mean, we're literally now, we're in-house manufacturing all of our products. I mean, everything that we do. That's from so, acrylic duck down to, you know, down to all the wood stuff for the turkeys.
That's so awesome. Dude,
really cool.
It's really cool. So he was jacked up. Like, it was.
Doing the full tour.
Oh, yeah. But I
need to get down and see it. I'll tell
a story on him. I don't know if he listens to the podcast. I hope he does. But we walked through, and he was like, hey, you know, we all kind of shook hands. And when we went to lunch, we walked back through, and he goes, hey, Josh, you mind? Could I get my picture made with you? And, you know, Josh was like, well, sure. And he goes, a couple of my buddies just don't believe that y'all are up here at the shop. And so, I mean, I took his picture, but it just goes, I mean, it's just really cool to see how it's grown, how it's changed. And, I mean, you guys are coworkers, you know.
Yeah, I love it. It's great.
But Russell's just like, I need my picture made. It's awesome. So.
You were saying about the production as far as how many mouth calls that y'all made.
Yeah.
Killer.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, frames.
Hope it doesn't undermine our ability to get some more frames. But I think in October we took delivery on 20,000.
Yeah.
And we're out of frames, like, as of today. And we need another, I don't know, 8,000 or 10,000.
Yeah, I mean, at least. I mean.
And we have
keep
we
the ball rolling.
Golly, y'all have been cranking them out as I just fall into this oblivion.
There's no y'all, is it, Hunter?
No.
Me and Hunter sitting over here like, we've been hunting for the last 3 months. It's that guy over there.
So you've been making all of them on your own?
Yes.
He bangs them out, man. He's
golly. How long? I think I might have asked you on this last one. Like, start to finish, how long does it take you to make one?
Maybe, like, between starts from the latex and all the steps. Maybe a minute and a half.
And that's I've tried it. I've tried stretch of mouth calls 100 times. You know, I mean, I'd love to be able to do it, honestly, just between hunting and contest calling. But it takes such, to me anyway, it takes such a skilled hand to get them lined up just perfect and then get, it's so hard. And
it's like a
minute and a half, low key. That's incredible.
It's like a surgeon's hand. You remember that old game, like, surgery,
yeah.
operation. Yeah. Like, my dad is a surgeon, right? Yep. And he's an incredibly skilled surgeon. He could close his eyes and pull those things out. And, like, as kids, we'd be like, you know, that's the way building mouth calls is, man. I mean, it's a steady hand. It's unbelievable.
To do it with that speed it's unbelievable, really.
And with that consistency.
Yes.
I mean, it's a lot of muscle memory now. I mean,
could you do it blindfolded? Someone had to ask.
Probably. I mean, it probably wouldn't be. Yeah, I probably could.
Might I'd take 2 minutes.
I'd probably be nervous about smashing my finger underneath the press.
Hey, mind over matter. I believe in you.
Those finished products would probably be the ones you'd give to me. So what would it matter anyway?
Well, you'd make them sound good. So
yeah, you could still yelp on them better than most of us.
So I cut you off right before y'all are about to talk about some of your spring plans and where you were planning on hunting next with the introductions. But if you want to take that off.
For me, so far, I mean, I'd plan on going to Florida and definitely hitting a few states in the South, whether it's Georgia, Alabama. Love to come up here to Tennessee. Wink.
And, you're invited.
And then really
you,
excited.
You already heard me tell somebody on the phone today that there would be no business happening between 12:30 and 4:30 during the month of April. So come on.
But I'm really excited to hunt up north, up at home, man. It's something else. I mean, there's nothing like hunting at home. Everybody knows that. And the turkey hunting is really, really awesome up by me. And we're going to head there. And then Josh and I were talking about maybe going to Wisconsin, a couple other states. And I hit Maine last year, actually, which I'd love to do again in June. Mm-hmm. And that was a whole different ball game, man. It was something I'd never experienced. And it was good. I mean, we killed our turkeys. But just almost like Florida in a way.
Yeah.
As how different it is from anywhere else I've ever hunted. But yeah, for me, I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking so far. We haven't got it narrowed down yet. I don't know what Josh was thinking, but
Whatever. I've been waiting on you to make up your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we'll figure it out. We talked about some different stuff on the ride down yesterday. I know I'm just excited to get back in the car and cover some ground and hit a few different states. Last year it was, it was tough. Like, you know, the last 13 years of my life, every spring, you know, it was like months on end turkey hunting. And then all last spring I spent hunting 10 minutes from the house the whole season with COVID and everything else going on, no traveling or filming that we were doing. So, I'm excited to just get back after there and get to chasing them.
It's going to be fun. Hunter Phelps is going to film these guys.
Awesome.
Which will be pretty exciting.
If you were trying not to make noise, you made the most you could have. That was awesome.
If that 20 seconds is not the teaser that you put on Instagram, you're fired.
What happened?
It sounded like somebody was letting a buck roar freaking roll in the background.
A little snort wheeze over there from the south end of the farm.
Snort wheeze and a buck chasing a doe.
Oh, man.
I think they're going to have a good time with Phelps, and I don't think he knows what he's getting into yet.
No. Nope.
So
I've heard talked to a few other guys that we've worked with in the past and brought his name up, and they were like, man, this dude, he's legit. You guys are going to love it, and, you know, he does great work.
Yeah, he's good.
Excited for that.
He's good.
It'll be fun.
He's great and loves to hunt, too. Just like, oh, doing the video side of it, the picture side of it, but he's a hunter too. And
yeah, he's like I don't know Lake Pickle very well at all, so I hope this is not offensive to Lake, but he's the kind of cameraman that's got a yelper in his mouth the whole time, like whether or not he's blowing it, he just feels like he needs to be in the game, you know.
So. Sounds good, as long as I got the gun.
That's right. It definitely takes a hunter's eye to be a good camera guy. Yeah. I mean, anybody
y'all
knows
have
that,
fun with him.
Yeah. See, I'm excited for sure.
Good.
Yeah. Y'all need to check out his stuff he did from the Mallard States episode from North Dakota.
Yeah.
That's some of his stuff. If you haven't watched that, it's pretty sharp. It's good stuff.
Oh, I'm sure Josh is just jacked up about watching duck hunting. I bet he can't wait over there to go check that out.
Listen, so speaking of duck hunting, this guy over here is quite the grinder. Last night we were watching the Super Bowl, and, I mean, he's on the telephone constantly. Well, there's weather coming in, so they're going to fly about 11 o'clock tomorrow, you know. I mean, just constantly just talking that goose grinder talk. If we get him and Dylan in the same room, it'll be.
This is go time, man. They got on a big feed yesterday, and they're hunting it without me tomorrow, I think, so.
Oh, man.
A little teardrop tonight, but.
Oh, they're probably going to have a way better time.
Probably. I bet they will.
How long is it open in Pennsylvania?
I think it goes to the 20th this year. They always had it to where it would go almost to the end there, but just the way it laid this year with that last – they didn't give you the last full week. But it's either feast or famine, you know. You get that – where we get some warm weather, it's you just murder them. But when you don't, it's, you know, it's just stale geese. But it's fun, man. I enjoy hunting up there.
Well – good.
It is. Hunting is good.
Yeah, big gobblers are good.
That's right.
Big gobblers.
None of that waterfowl stuff.
Big gobblers. Oh, me.
Well, what do you got lined up this spring, Spencer?
Man, I'd like to get the kids a few more turkeys. I got a little girl in there. Not little anymore, but she's pretty jacked up about it. So I definitely need to get her one or two. Trip doesn't know it yet, but Keelan and I are going to take Trip and Weston to Kansas April 13th and 14th for the last 2 days of the youth.
Oh, that'll be awesome.
And then Keelan and I are going to hunt for 2 days. And so our goal is to make the boys help them kill two turkeys each and then make them watch us kill two turkeys apiece. And I kind of got a hankering to think that them watching us kill one will be as much of a learning opportunity for them as them actually killing one themselves. So both of them killed their first bird last spring, and Weston killed a couple deer this winter. Tripp didn't kill a deer. He got close a couple times, and they both killed their first ducks this winter. So they're kind of spreading their wings and learning the ways, being very, young killers.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Kansas is definitely a place to do it, too, man.
Yeah, it's cool. My buddy, out there. I've got a buddy out there named Connor Hickel, and he's just loaded to the gills. I mean, he's just got some top-notch ground. And so it ought to be a lot of fun, and hopefully we'll have ample opportunities and let them burn some powder.
No, I'm sure you will out there. I used to hunt out there as a youth all the time, and man, that you get the weather right when it starts getting warm early, there, it is
just losing their mind.
Bang up, it's pretty awesome.
So you're saying y'all would travel Pennsylvania, Kansas?
Yeah. When I was a young kid, I hunted Kansas a lot. Started deer hunting out there, but I started deer hunting because of turkey hunting out there, and I had a lot of fun in Kansas. I haven't turkey hunted in a while. I'd love to get out there this year, actually. That was another thing we were talking about doing, and that'd be a great state to hit if we could.
Yeah, well, Kansas and, Missouri with J.R., J.R. Lanham, one of our guys, and also Alabama with Terrence. Just got to get all this stuff squared away. It's always
– got to get the calendar out.
The plans will manifest themselves like enough. Couple days in advance.
Yeah. Two or three days and four.
Yeah. That always makes the wives happy. No notice.
Yeah. I was asking Hunter earlier because we were talking about trip traveling just a little bit this spring, and he was telling me, how old were you when you killed your first Osceola?
I think I was nine. Either nine or ten. It's one or the other. Either nine or ten. But
yeah,
my dad and I had gone down there, and that's actually the same guy that I hunt with now. So it was kind of a cool story because the first time I had gone down there, I killed a turkey, and a lot of time had gone by, maybe 6 or 7 years at least. And we kept in contact with the outfitter. His name's Ratso Pennington, and
what a cool maybe, name!
Yeah, Ratso.
Yeah, Ratso. And a lot of time had gone by, like I said, and maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we had gotten in contact about going down there and hunting again, and we went down there and we filmed a show. For AVNX, when we were with AVNX and filmed a show down there and got to be really close buddies. And it's just been, we've been going down there ever since. And, it just makes it so cool that that was the first place I ever killed my first Osceola, being so young like that. And to
go back.
And, it's kind of hopefully a tradition now to go down there and hunt. And,
sounds like it already is.
Yeah.
That's what's so fun about turkey hunting to me is, going and seeing the same people in the same places, just,
Well, your dad actually guides for him.
Yeah. Dad started going down there a couple of years ago. Probably that first year we went back, and when he's got his extra time, he stays down there a couple of weeks, help the guys out. And
can your dad yelp pretty well? I wasn't trying to put you on the spot. But
he's actually got a scratch box that he can cut.
Really?
Yeah, it'll make turkeys gobble.
Wow.
It's effective. But if you ask him, there's nothing else in the world that's better than that cut box. I mean, I could strike a turkey up from 500 yards away.
And he's going to tell you to be quiet and let him work
the turkey. The cut box is what did it, though. I could call him. I could call him over five mountains, 64 freaking rivers, and he's still – the cut box killed him. That's what got him going.
I love it.
He loves the cut
box. That's a good dad.
Yeah. Oh, if you come up and hunt with us, you're going to
– You got to witness laughs. This.
Yeah. I love it. I can't wait.
He'll get some laughs. There's no
doubt
about it.
Does he use any other calls? I mean, is he a...
He'll get on them. I mean, usually when we're hunting together, I'm always calling with him. But if he takes other people out, he'll call on a glass call or mouth call a little bit.
Okay.
He gets them killed, He does it.
He can locate them like nobody's business. He finds them and he gets the spots.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
That's key. No doubt. We wouldn't have a lot of turkeys that we had if it wasn't for him.
Is your dad retired?
He is retired now. He had a little furniture store for... Okay. His whole life, my grandpa started, and he retired 3 or 4 years ago, and he's trying to keep happy, man, keep living it up. We lost my mom last year, which was tough, and
that's
been really tough on him, but just trying to keep him busy. And
y'all did a lot of hunting this fall and winter.
We did, which is awesome. We were out in Colorado, and I got a buddy who's an outfitter out in Wyoming. We were there for about a month guiding and helping out and shooting critters, and awesome. it was great. It was a lot of good time together, so I enjoyed it.
You need that.
No doubt.
That's awesome. Well, is you think he's going to get on the road with you a little bit this spring?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure. It'll be testing. We'll put it that way. Anyway. It'll definitely be testing.
Shoot, we all know what that's like.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to one thing this spring. My dad got hearing aids. Before he got these hearing aids, he was deaf. We were telling a story, I don't remember, maybe it was Saturday night this weekend. He had a one of those little Iron Man watches, you know, just the $20 Walmart
it's
watch.
Sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen it. At 6:15, his alarm goes off. And then it goes. He couldn't hear that pitch. And let me just tell you, about second week of turkey season, 6:15 is like fly down time.
Prime.
I mean, and so it'd be like bird had gobbled 15 times and you'd just gotten settled into position. And I'd get just far enough away from him where I could comfortably call bird for him and where he was going to have a nice shot. And I mean, it was like about the time that bird was going to stretch his old wings and come to deep, deep. Deep, deep.
I'd be going, boy,
Dad, Dad. Of course, he couldn't hear me whispering, couldn't hear his watch. So now he can hear that with his hearing aid, so there's no telling what this spring's going to be like because he can hear everything.
Yeah. Wow.
He has no directional hearing, but least he can hear his alarm when it goes off on his phone, on his wristwatch. So, oh, me.
You know, it's funny you say that. Right around here, you know, in April, they're flying down at what, six o'clock, six twenty,
like
or something like that. That last turkey that I killed last year, in the first week of June in Maine,
I just told
we
him
were,
this.
Yeah,
I had killed. I shot him, I believe, at like 4:30.
Yeah,
on the
I told
that's
him
unreal.
That
is
we refer to Maine as the land of 4 a.m. gobble time.
Yeah,
because I mean they're fired up at 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah, and at home the last couple weeks of the season there, well, the last week or so, you know, they're on the ground by 5 o'clock sometimes, mm-hmm. but it's still not, it's dark then. But up there, man, 4:30 is like, they're 100% going to be on the ground. Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to kill one off the roost, he's dead and you're at the truck by 5. He's right. I mean, the one I killed was on June 2nd in 18, and he'd flown down. Got with some hens, quit gobbling. We moved and got around him. I killed him at 4:55.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Wow.
It's something else, man. Opposed to, you know, hunting Alabama and stuff in mm-hmm. March, you know, they're not flying down until
right.
almost 7 o'clock.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right.
That's hard to imagine.
Yeah.
It's like when y'all were in North Dakota and shooting like legal shooting time.
Oh, yeah, it was like 7:56. Yeah. This year, what you're remembering is when we went, the – daylight savings time hadn't hit yet. And
yeah.
So it was the very end of like, gets late, super, super, gets light, super late.
Yep.
The sun comes up. It's you're 30 minutes before sunrise, so
right.
It's the same light setting. It's just that it was at almost 8 o'clock by the time it was legal yeah. shooting time.
That's crazy.
Wow. It's kind of nice. I mean,
yeah, sleep in a little bit.
And we were on the far western edge of the central time zone, you know, so it – And in Maine, you're on the far
eastern
edge
side, yeah.
of the eastern time zone, so it just you don't realize how much that the geography east to west
it really
time
affects
zone
it.
Affects yeah. you know light.
Yeah.
But same's true for when you go out west. You know, in Wyoming or Montana, way out into May, you know, it doesn't get dark until like 9:50. By the time you roost a bird and get in the truck and get back to the hotel or whatever, heck, it's 10:30, 10:45, and everything's closed, and you starve to death.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's light again at 4:30 or 4:45 or something silly.
Yep.
Sheesh. That's what I remember about Montana was just the days were just ridiculously long. Got light early and got
dark late. Phew.
I just don't do good without my beauty sleep.
Especially at that point in the season.
Yeah.
That's a tough stretch right there.
Yeah. I feel like you need your beauty sleep too, Josh.
Oh, it's been a long day. I'm wiped out.
You're one of those guys, though, that you need your sleep.
Sometimes.
Dude, we're in Pennsylvania sometimes, and my dad would always bring it up. Man, you guys taking these naps? I mean, there'd be some days we'd get back at noon, and we would not roll out of bed until 7 o'clock. I mean, just power naps to a whole new level.
You have to quit at noon in Pennsylvania?
It's a half deal. So the first half of the season you can only hunt until 12, and then the second half of the season there you can hunt all day.
Oh,
which
okay.
is rather new too. They started that maybe 5-6 years ago, something like that. Which is, it's kind of cool the way
spin on the rule.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I wish that we in Tennessee. I wish we had that morning hunting and done. I mean, I don't kill many in the afternoon, but a lot of people will slip off and kill one after work.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
it is nice sometimes though when you're traveling and hunting every day for weeks on end to roll into a state where like. Oh, we can only hunt until noon. Well, that's kind of cool.
It's take a
nap. You get a 6-hour nap and then wake up just in time to try to roost one. Yep.
It's nice to give them a break, too, you know, and it makes – I mean, I think it makes for better hunting just because, you know, they get that whole half a day off. You get to scout them the night before. You're not worried about going in there after them and trying to kill one. But, you know, at the same time, that toward the end of the season there is not a night that I'm not out hunting. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's cool. I think it's cool the way they got it broke up.
Do y'all have a noon – 12 noon rule.
It's the
Ohio.
Same as Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I don't guess.
Yeah, it
was that.
The. It might have switched. I know last 2 years ago it was the first 2 weeks was just the morning, and then the last 2 weeks was all day. I think it was the same last year. I can't remember. Last season to me was such a blur, just the way that everything was.
I do feel like we kind of took a whole year off from bunch of things. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in 20 that I missed, you know, the fall shows and just, I don't know, there's just a myriad of things that seem like we just kind of skipped
right over
2019 to 2021.
I know, we kind of, everybody kind of keeps talking about like, it'll be back around next year, but it looks like spring stuff's getting pushed and stuff's getting canceled again. You're like, oh, not again.
Even bringing up about the NWTF show being canceled. I mean, I was thinking to myself the other day, like, going turkey hunting, you know, technically before going there is going to be such a weird – because, you know, you get there and that's like – it's almost like your kickoff to spring. Exactly. You know what I mean? It gets you really jacked up. And that's going to be weird in itself, but
– no doubt.
I really hope that they've got it figured out by next spring, but, I mean, the biggest reason they pushed it off this year was because they needed some assurances from Nashville, you know, 6-7 months in advance in order to do the planning, because there's so much planning and organizational stuff that goes in behind the scenes to pulling off that many vendors and 50,000 folks, you know, coming through the, the doors.
Things you don't even think about just in terms of flow and then, heck – I guess the fire marshal's got something to say about that too.
Right. And so what they told us was that if they went ahead and spent the money on the planning and the organization of it and then got told 2 weeks before that they couldn't have it, that was just lost money. And so it was a kind of a unfortunate decision they had to make. But I guess the point being that we're gonna have to figure this stuff out pretty quick if we're gonna have a convention in 2021. Yeah. I mean, in 22 is what I mean, February 22. And Lord knows we all need one emotionally, and the NWTF needs one financially.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big event.
And been going to it, you know, for the last 20 years. I mean, a lot of close friends. I mean, it's like a humongous family reunion. And a lot of those people, this is the only time of the year you get to hang out and visit with them. And, you know, you got to cram it all into that 3-day weekend, and it's a lot. But, I mean, God, everybody looks forward to it. And like Connor said, it's a kickoff to the spring. Like, hey, we just left the convention, you know, let's go hunting.
Exactly.
It's just tough.
Yeah.
We need to figure out a way for Somerville to host it if it doesn't happen. How many can you sleep at the Deerfield in?
Right now, Somerville's struggling to figure out where they're going to host the local chapter banquet because there's nobody that's willing to have 75 or 100 people eat dinner there. But, Lord have mercy.
Yeah, I even miss going to the small banquets. Yeah.
They were fun themselves, man.
Are they completely no more in y'all's areas?
I don't know about this year. I mean, last year, nothing went on, I remember.
Not really.
Maybe this year they're trying something different. I don't really know.
I know ours is scheduled. It's March 25th here. But that's the only one I've heard of. And
I know of a few of them going on in Ohio, but as far as, like, our local chapter at home, it's usually in August, and obviously it was canceled.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything about it coming up for this summer yet, but I know there are a few that are going down.
Yeah. Well, I hope that we can get all this figured out because it's more than just fun. You know, there have been some pretty high quality folks that have been lost. I mean, this is a serious thing. It's not just a political ploy. And so I hope for everybody's sake that we can get this figured out and move on behind us.
Absolutely.
There's definitely some pretty cool stuff that we're missing.
Yeah.
Pretty cool folks. And so, all right, let's go back to calls for just a second. Give me a prediction on what do you think are the best seller of the Signature Collection is going to be this spring.
Do we got to be honest?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, or you can lie. I don't care. I mean, either way is okay.
I'm just kidding. I'm going to predict Hunter's.
Which one?
Hunter Wallace.
I mean, he's got three. He's got three calls in his collection. So.
Oh, the three reed with latex, the red top with two black reeds.
It's got some pop, man. It's eye appealing. But yeah. Since Josh was nice and voted for me, I'll go ahead and say that one of his is going to be the best seller. Probably that combo cut that you have on the top there with the two underling of black and the top one gray.
Is that the one that's got two heavy layers of black latex?
Heavy layer. And that's the big gobbler call.
Yeah,
not
the big gobbler,
call.
Yeah. And so one of the things you need to know about that call, Rob, is that if you're not getting exactly the tones you want out of it right out of the package, just keep after it because those two heavy layers of thick black latex take a little bit to season and kind of
break in a little bit. Yeah.
Now, I know that you're being smart here, but
it
is
being halfway serious too.
I know. Okay. In all of the signature calls, like mine and Hunter's and JR's, that have the black latex, that black latex is thicker than, mm-hmm. you know, your regular 2000s latex. But I've found in building calls and running calls for a long time and messing with this stuff that when you throw these heavier latex calls in, they, you know, they won't run they're a little bit tough to blow. And as you keep messing with them, they break in a little bit. You get them wet, let them dry out, get them wet again. They're going to break in, and you're going to find that, I mean, they're going to have some crack, and you can put some power into them, mm-hmm. but they take a little time to break in. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, if you pull that call out of the pack and you're not getting exactly what you want out of it right away, I mean, don't get frustrated. I mean, just keep working with it. I mean, all mouth calls are different, but.
Yeah, no, that's good to know. I mean, frankly, I'm busting your chops, but.
I know, but it's getting old. It's been going on all day, you know. You guys don't take nothing serious, like
kids.
This is
it's childish.
Childish,
so childish. What do you think we're in the business of yelping up Jakes around here? We're trying to kill big gobblers, okay?
Hey, man, I want to see you guys be successful too.
What would you just call a big gobbler? Just out of curiosity, what would be a big gobbler?
A long beard.
Long beard.
I'd have to
long beards are going to die. Cue some Walt music. We should dub Walt into this as a phone call.
We can get him in here.
No, I mean, I'm busting your chops about the thick latex, but a cut down reed's exactly the same. So is a goose call reed. I mean, 14 mil mylar is heavy and thick. And so, you know, the more it flexes and moves, the more, you know, response it's got you know,
Well, I don't think that it's ever really been talked about. Mm-hmm. I mean, people don't, you know, you buy a call, you throw it in your mouth, and that one doesn't work, and you throw it off to the side. But, yeah, I mean, like I said.
Speaking of things that don't get talked about, just practice is not something that gets talked about a ton in the mainstream anymore. I mean.
No, and like for Hunter and I, it's we're so close to it, you know, being competition callers for so long. We're constantly blowing turkey calls, driving down the road, whatever, year round.
Just part of what you do.
Come spring season, you know, we're ready to go. But yeah, a lot of guys.
The funny thing about it is, sorry to interrupt, but just, you know, you talk about practicing. I notice 100%, even in the time, you know, Grand National is over, I practice for it, you know, we all practice for it. But at the end of the season, my calling is just from blowing a call every day to that extent. You know, you're calling even after the first week of the season. Mm-hmm. Your calling just takes a whole nother level.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. If your calls aren't absolutely blown out by the end of the season,
that's very true. That's very true.
So speaking of practice, talk about how you practice for a contest, because like in a duck call contest, you're blowing one 90-second routine from start to finish. And so you don't typically practice your segments. I mean, you might a couple months beforehand, you might practice this segment and then kind of time them. But once you put your routine together, you kind of just practice from start to finish the whole way through, try to do it 8 or 10 times, you know, perfect. How do you practice?
I mean, everybody's so different with it. I'm sure I don't practice the right way. Just ask Josh. But it's like, especially with these new, you know, the Grand Nationals have these new scenarios now. Well, I mean, they did anyway. And with the scenario format, man, it is so much harder than just going up there and running, you know, cutting, fly down, cackle, yelping. You got to incorporate that all into one thing. So what I was doing last year practicing is I'd do a scenario and I'd record myself. And I listen to it back, and then I do it. You know, I'd make myself do it like 5 times. Mm-hmm. Do that. Mm-hmm. Do the 2 scenarios 5 times every night, and you know that'd be good. And I'd record every one of them and listen to them over, and then you know, just every night, as long as I put away an hour or something mm-hmm. to do it. That's kind of how I was doing it last year.
And so, for somebody who might not have listened to the last time that you were on, the scenario calling is when like you don't know until they tell you right at the time, right? So they're gonna say this is the scenario, and then you have to be like string it together right then and be ready.
Well, they have like predicted scenarios, so okay. they'll have like 4 different scenarios. You know, there's a fall scenario. What is there? 2 fall scenarios?
No, there's 3 scenarios. There'd be
is there
like 2 springtime scenarios, and yeah. one fall scenario, and they would pick 2 of the 3. But okay. We would get those a couple
months in advance,
yeah,
or something.
Oh, okay. Months in advance, so. You know, you're prepared, but you just
scenario. You could always bet on it being a spring and a fall.
But
you know, that's just what they're going
to do. You still had to make the cut to get to the finals to get into that scenario situation. Yeah. The preliminaries were kind of the same.
They were categories of.
Yes.
Yeah, it was the same 4 calls.
I got you.
Well, they'd choose 4 calls, and you'd have to run it like the old style of contest.
So the old style of contest, how many categories are there?
To choose from? Well, that's the thing, kind of like the scenarios. I mean, how many different sets of calls are there, like 8 or 9?
Oh, I think on the score sheet there's 13.
Yeah, so there's 13, but they pick – in the finals they'd pick 5, wouldn't they, out
of
those?
Yeah, like 5 in the finals, yeah. 4 in the preliminary.
So of the 13 categories, if you will, I mean, when you're practicing, are you practicing all 13 of those categories?
Some more than others.
Yeah.
You could bet on – some type of yelping being in there, whether it's excited yelping, plain yelp, anything like that. You're going to bet on cackling or cutting.
Kiki run.
Definitely going to be in there. And then some type of soft call, either tree call, cluck and purr, or something like that. But the scenarios just take it to such a whole different level because you got to add all that stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And you got to cram it into a two-minute period or a 3-minute period? It's either 2 or 3 minutes.
Was it 3?
It might be 3. But regardless, you got to cram it all into one thing, and you got to make it sound like it's all happening.
Real time.
Yeah.
Got to flow.
It's tough.
You're getting scored also on your presentation, you know, how everything, you know, you can't just make a bunch of sounds, and you got to have a method, or there's got to be a reason why everything's happening mm-hmm. while you're up there.
Hmm. Interesting.
So if you were talking to somebody who's trying to, like, never done a mouth call, or they're looking at buying like Rolling Thunders for the first time, how do they go about selecting like a first call? Do you recommend like buying a couple and seeing what you like and see what works, or how do you go about that?
For a beginner, inexperienced caller, I would like probably direct them more towards like the Done Deal. It's a latex call, 3 reed. It doesn't have a thick stretch to it. I mean, to me, with the calls in the line, I can blow it pretty easy. The simple V is a 2 reed, a V cut that I know when I run them, they're a little bit tough for me. I'm not a V cut guy or a 2 reed guy anymore, but to produce sounds and get that rasp that most beginners are excited about producing that mm-hmm. sound, you know, it'll do that.
Mm-hmm. The Done Deal's been very popular for that reason. You're right.
Yeah.
It's a combo cut. So as you start to kind of get out of just making a sound and into trying to get a cleaner front end on your note, I mean, you can still do that with that call.
Yeah.
It's not as advanced as others, but it's a good call for kind of transitioning that way.
I would take it any day of the season to use it to try to kill a turkey. There's no doubt.
a two read is always a goat. I mean, if there's somebody asking me, you always got to push somebody toward a two read for there's something to start out with, just because of the ease of blowing. But no, that's the other nice thing about these all these triple packs we have now, because there's something different in every one, and every triple pack is going to have one call that's perfect for a beginner. Whether it's like my pack's got a two read, or some of the other pack, like you have a ghost cut or something that's just real easy to blow and get clear notes and just get used to the whole grand scheme of things. And once you get that one mastered, you move on to one that's a little harder to blow. So that's another good thing for, somebody just starting out to try anyway.
Okay.
I know y'all didn't ask me this, but when I started the question about the practice, the point I was about to make was that I see the very same thing happen in duck calls where somebody says, I want to try to learn to blow a duck call. Well, they buy a duck call, and then immediately it's like, well, that one doesn't fit me. So they try a different duck call. And before long, they bought 20 of them instead of actually buying one and figuring out how to blow it.
Right.
And so the difference between buying one and it doesn't – it goes so fast from I'm going to learn how to do this to, oh, that one doesn't fit me.
Yeah.
And the gap between there is practice.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's kind of like in the world of 2021 and just life now, we don't talk about practice. And I mean, I don't sit around and yelp as much as I used to, but man, I mean, I've blown duck calls a bazillion times. I mean, I just put in time practicing. And I remember when I tried to learn a contest routine, I mean, I broke it down to just the basic element of a single quack and making sure that quack was just as precise as I could make it, and then the cadence and just, practicing by the elements. And it's so boring. But if you can get somebody to believe in it enough to actually practice that way, and then you can really build something,
Yeah.
And it's the same way with turkey calls.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I know when I got started and really practicing, once I like really figured out how to get that clear to rasp in a yelp, and I was like, oh man, this, like, I just can't stop this. And I'd be out in the shop at my mom and dad's, I mean, just walking back and forth practicing yelping, and man, it'd be 10 o'clock when I started. Next thing I know, it's like 2:30 in the morning. Like, I'm still like going through all this stuff, and I mean, it was all the time. And then when I met Hunter and we got to talking on the phone and running calls together and working on stuff, like, he'd run his calls nonstop for me, and I'd be sitting there and I'd tell him what I think, and I made him take notes, like, hey,
write this down,
work on this, don't do, like, you can leave this one little section, one little part out, whatever. And then he'd call me the next day and he's like, hey, this is what I've been working on, and like slowing things down, whatever. And
yeah, I still have a notebook of just like yelp, plain yelp, 7 series, stop. Like, just so repetitive, just stuff trying to get down.
We worked really hard on that for like every night for weeks.
Yeah.
And it was
cool.
The point I'm trying to get at here is that when you hear Josh yelp or Hunter yelp, 99% of the people that are sitting there will say, golly, it's just not fair. I wish I could yelp like that. And, I mean, Josh told a story last night, the first mouth call you were given.
Oh.
He said he walked around and blew it backwards for 2 weeks. He had the reed toward his throat and the tape toward the front. And he was trying
trying to suck it in on it, trying to get sounds over the reeds.
I had no idea. Yeah.
So the point I'm trying to make here is that the gap between the mouth call is backwards and you can't make any sound at all to when in, I'm not even going to pretend to guess at how many contests you guys have won, but the gap between there is practice. I mean, you don't just wake up and pop a mouth call in your mouth and be able to, to yelp like that. I mean, you commit a lot of time,
a lot of practice, a lot of listening to, live hens on YouTube, spending time in the woods. I think my favorite time of, I wouldn't call it, I guess you could call it practicing, but being in the woods with a live hen and carrying on a conversation with a real live hen that's yelping and cutting, I swear it actually like changes how I like run a call, because like you instantly like get, I don't want to say on her level, but like it's so much easier when you're reacting and interacting with those cadence and rhythms like right there in the woods. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
It makes you such a better caller. I don't know if you remember that hunt, Josh, from a couple of years ago where that hen come ripping down that road and that gobbler come running right behind her.
Yeah.
That hen got going back and forth. Like, I could go back and listen to that hunt and just me calling back and forth with that hen and just thinking about it. Like, I don't make those cadences when I'm just calling to a gobbler. Mm. And when, you know, when I'm listening to me going back and forth with that hen, like, it just clicks something in your brain that you automatically, you have it.
You
and you're going right
to
right
kind of emulate that
rhythm.
100%. Mm-hmm. And it, man, that Josh is so right about that. It makes you such a better caller. But, you know, you could take something too, like, to, you know, to take into account, if I took Josh's signature pack right there, there's maybe one call out of it that I could blow decent, not even good. So it takes a little bit of figuring out to what you like the best. You know what I mean? Which is another thing.
What's cool about our line is we've got so much versatility between my calls, JR's, Hunter's, Kevin Taylor's three are all thinner reeded. And that's going to be and they're not very tight stretched, and there's a lot there that, I mean, a lot of guys are going to love those calls as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I get what you're saying about, you know, there's different ones. The point I was trying to make was that before you decide what your quote-unquote style is, you need to learn how to operate.
No, 100%, right. Yeah.
Just like with a duck call. 100%. It's like you need to be able to blow a duck call before you can decide, nah, that one doesn't fit me. Just not wanting to practice is not a good excuse for that doesn't fit me.
Well, also, you were talking about recording yourself and listening to it.
Yeah, that's huge.
And just being able to go back.
Every good caller, no matter what the category or the game is, I know that's the first answer I hear them say is, man, I just used to record myself, and I'd listen to it back. Being able to listen with a critical ear is really, really
good. Well, it's also – it sounds a little dumb, but it sounds so different when it's in your head and you're feeling, I guess, the vibration of the call and everything else, but then when you kind of can step back from it and you can hear
100%.
It.
100%. Yes.
It's really – you're like, oh, definitely. Wow, that sounded a lot higher pitched than it felt when I was doing that.
You could go in the house here and run a call, and it's going to sound so awesome because the acoustics are so great in there and – Spence's kitchen. You come out here or go back in the barn and the sound's going to be completely different. There's rooms at the office where I was running calls this morning. I'm like, man, it just sounds dead to me. It's like just flat sounding. And
then you go in another room and it starts bouncing off the walls and it has life. There's so many different variables, man.
That's another thing in practice. And you got to, like, preparing for the Grand Nationals or whatever, you got to make sure that you're practicing in a room where your calling is going to be true to that room as well.
Interesting, like, yeah.
Because it can mess you up.
I didn't think about that. So here's another different question. Are there different – you're talking about there's different tension on the read and different calls. Are there different mouth calls that you would use for a more open situation versus a more wooded situation in terms of how that read might make a different or deeper tone that might carry further, or is that just thinking the crap out of it? Okay. So
that's a good question.
It's question. I would think, like, I mean, instantly my mind just went to, like, big open area. I'd probably go to a boxer.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Okay.
I may not choose a different mouth call. I mean,
you might go to a friction
nobody
call.
Nobody wants to know my opinion about this. We're sitting here with Hunter and Josh, but if I saw a gobbler at 400 yards out in the field, I would hit him with a box call.
Yeah.
Probably be my
some type of friction call because they just no matter
just
what
carries,
they have,
seems like it carries further.
They have way more of a ring. Frequency's going to hit them better. But I mean, if I were to choose a mouth call, I'm obviously not going to choose a two read or something that's very tuned down. I'm going to choose something that's a little thicker read, maybe like a call that you would use to strike turkeys up. That's just, you know, a little harder to blow, but it's louder.
And so, okay, I guess also going to somebody who's not a really experienced turkey hunter is what's the advantage of using a mouth call? Subtlety. Not a lot of movement, I mean, over a friction call.
A lot of difference. I mean, the hands-free, you know.
I mean, the biggest one to me is that once they're mastered, it's the most realistic. I mean, nothing.
By far the most realistic.
You know,
the range of sound.
You don't have to move, which is one huge thing, hunting turkeys. You can't move. Yeah. So that's another one. It's just.
I would say the biggest reason that friction calls are so popular in turkey hunting is because they're so much easier to attain. Yes. High quality sounds than mouth calls are.
Less and practice.
Yeah, way less practice. I mean, a box call is almost dummy proof. You know, I mean, you can get somebody making decent yelps pretty quick.
To an extent.
That's true. But
kind of like you can pick up a harmonica and make a sound, but it doesn't mean you can play it kind of deal.
Sort of.
Get me a harmonica.
Yeah. But anyways, That's a good question, but I think the answer to your question is distance, not just not the environment. That'd be my, I don't know.
All right.
Well, on that note, that's
it. We're just listening to that fire.
Way good conversation. Just kinda
we can just snip it out. Sounds like it's just rocking.
Well, I'm looking forward to being over here at Turkey Gobble from right here where we're sitting. I was telling Josh.
Yeah.
Right before we started recording that it's not real often on this farm behind me that you can hear them roosted, but about twice every spring I'll have them about 400 yards from right here. Maybe
that's 500 awesome.
Yards. You can hear them gobbling.
That's hey, pretty nice.
Here's a.
I don't get to hunt them. I mean,
no.
I'll stand nice. Out here and hoot like a, yeah. like a moron until they're tired of gobbling.
Here's a tangent for you. Talking about this weekend you were doing some Save the Poults.
Yeah.
Setting up traps. Talk yeah. about that.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, we were definitely hoping to improve our turkey population, but the main reason we put a bunch of traps out this weekend was just because I wanted to see the kids try to kill a few of them, and they had a blast.
Did you barehand another possum?
Oh, yeah. It's easy to barehand a possum. There's a reason they say play possum. You get down there close to them, and they'll just hold still.
I know, but you've done that so often, so they just got
kind of my calling card.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, everyone's got a signature move.
Yeah, we had a good time. We had a nice, good youth hunt, and we set the traps out Friday night before we made dinner. So after we got done hunting Saturday morning, we just before we got back to the house, we just ran the trap line, and I guess we caught 3 coons and a possum. We had a 4th one, but we had a little trap malfunction at the point of coon death, and he got his foot out, and he got gone.
So hmm.
It's kind of a weird situation. I don't think I really want to document fully on a podcast. Yeah. For all
it's all right.
But Triple's the gunner. And he didn't die. He got gone.
Mm.
So, you know, you win some, lose some.
Win some, lose some, no doubt.
All I can say is that coon will not be raiding a turkey nest with his right foot, front right foot. He might be with his front left foot, but not with his front right foot. But, yeah, man, there's a lot of people trapping. Have y'all noticed that? Just across social media.
Flick of the switch, man.
It's unbelievable. It's really become popular this spring. I mean, and that's great. I
yeah.
mean, good Lord knows we don't need any more, you know, predators to the nest and the eggs. I mean, we're hard enough on the turkeys ourselves, you know, as hunters, much less to let the nest predators keep running amok. So.
Well, it seemed like they're pretty effective, too, because y'all just put them out and they're just stuffed the next day.
Yeah, I mean, the little dog-proof traps are pretty – they're pretty easy to operate, and they're very effective. I mean, you know – I think I put out 14 traps and had 5 critters and really thought I was going to have 8 to 10 critters, you know. But I guess we had a slow night. Just wasn't a whole lot of movement. But
that's good news then.
Yeah, and they're very affordable. I think that one website that everybody's using, Duke and down in Mississippi, makes a very affordable trap. I think they're $12 or $15 a piece. But that No BS Lures website, I think you can buy 2 dozen traps for like $205 and maybe 3 dozen traps for like $290 or $300. I mean, so it's wow. They're like $8 a piece. I mean, if you can afford to buy a turkey hunting license, you can afford to
give back a little bit
of traps. Yeah.
Save a few poults along the way.
And it's really not hard. I mean, it took me maybe an hour to set a dozen traps or 14 traps or something. It was no big deal.
It's good stuff.
Yep. Very worthwhile. I think we got some tired folks, Rob.
I know. I'm about ready to go home and go to bed myself. Getting a little chilly out here. So.
Here's the turkey season. Absolutely. Next on the deck.
Absolutely. You should have played y'all's
obsession.
Should have played the turkey
oh,
intro.
Yeah.
Golly.
you know what? We could probably dub that in.
We could.
After editing. Yeah. If anybody's listening at this point, they'll appreciate the fact that you went in post-production and dubbed Toxie back in.
We can get it done.
Good.
Let's hear it.
All right.
Obsession. The domination of one's thoughts or feelings by a persistent idea, image, or desire. For the past 30 years, our obsession here at Mossy Oak has been chasing turkeys. That absolute commitment has led us to develop all new Mossy Oak Obsession, the most realistic, true-to-spring turkey pattern ever. This pattern was built by obsessed turkey hunters for obsessed turkey hunters. All new Mossy Oak Obsession, the official camo of the NWTF.
Here, here.
Nice. I feel like I'm in a movie theater.
Very dramatic.
It was. Well, enjoyed it,
Here's
fellas.
Hoping gobble time is that dramatic the first morning this spring.
Oh, yes, it will, man. Definitely.
Can't wait. Cannot wait.
All right.
Appreciate y'all entertaining us. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
It was a great time. Really was.
All right.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Rolling Thunder Podcast. We'll see you on the next one.
Later.